आया। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 17 टेक्स्ट 13 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। अख्याही वृष भद्रम वह साधूनाम अकृत आगसम आत्मा वैरूप्य कर्तारम पार्थानाम कीर्ति दूषणम। अख्याहि वृषभद्रम व साधूनाम अकृतागसाम आत्मवैरूप्यकर्तारम् पार्थानां कीर्तिदूषणम्। Translation: O bull, you are offenseless and thoroughly honest, therefore I wish all good to you. Please tell me of the perpetrator of these mutilations which blackmail the reputation of the sons of Pritha. Purport: the reputation of the reign of Maharaja Ramachandra and that of the kings who followed in the footsteps of Maharaja Ramachandra, like the Pandavas and their descendants, are never to be forgotten, because in their kingdom offenseless and honest living beings were never in trouble. The bull and the cow are the symbols of the most offenseless living beings, because even the stool and urine of these animals are utilized to benefit human society. The descendants of the son of Pritha, like Maharaj Parikshit, were afraid of losing their reputations, but in the modern days the leaders are not even afraid of killing such offenseless animals. Hence, herein lies the difference between the reign of those pious kings and the modern states ruled by irresponsible executive heads without knowledge of the codes of God. This verse and purport would have gone very nicely with the lecture I gave last night in Laguna Beach. I was speaking about cow protection, having heard that Tukaram Prabhu in Laguna Beach is heading up the charge for drinking, for devotees in America to drink only milk from protected cows. It's a major point. It's not some minor thing like keeping, people keep dogs as pets, and we might think, well, we keep cows as pets, and maybe, but it's a cornerstone of Vedic culture. The cow and the bull are to be protected. When we say cow in a generic sense, that includes the bull. Usually in Sanskrit and in English, when we speak of the male entity, we refer to the females also, just like mankind. We don't say mankind and womankind. It's understood. But in this case, when we say cow, it's understood to mean the cow should be protected, the bull should be protected. Here, the word sadhu is used to refer to the bull. And of course, the word sadhu is a common word. Is it? I guess it's gradually entering American English also, like so many other words. Yoga came, karma came, dharma, mantra, avatar. Yeah, completely misrepresented understanding, but nevertheless, it's there. Then gradually terms like samsara, mukti, moksha, all these terms will come. And as in India, they'll mostly be misunderstood and misrepresented also. Bhagavan, another much... Guru, oh, that's a misrepresented... that's a misrepresented word, isn't it? So the word sadhu is generally considered to be a holy man. It doesn't necessarily mean someone who's dressed in orange cloth or reddish cloth. It can mean anyone who's who lives a pious life. Here, Srila Prabhupada translates it of the sadhunam, plural, of the honest. Interestingly, he also uses that translation in the famous verse that ends the last line, Srinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadhava. The topics of Krishna, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, chanted, and accepted. And Srila Prabhupada, by sadhus, and Srila Prabhupada in this verse translation translates sadhu as purified men who are thoroughly honest. It's not exactly, if you want to be exact, a dictionary definition. But actually in Sanskrit, anyway, the whole concept of dictionary is quite different. It's only conventional to imitate the other language, Hare Krishna, dictionaries, that Sanskrit has a dictionary, because each word is derived from its root. So it's not like you have the word tree in English and it has nothing in relation to the entity that we know as a tree. But words in Sanskrit, they are all descriptive, just like the word padapa, who drinks through its leg. And the very common term is vriksha, but I don't know what that means, how it comes. Hmm? Oh, right, that's how it gets cut, yeah. That which is liable to get cut. So, Srila Prabhupada, he translates this sadhu as honest, which fits because sadhu is also derived from the term sat, which has many meanings. It means good, true, eternal. So that a person who speaks the truth, lives in the truth, by the truth, for the truth, can properly be called a sadhu. And the Parthanam, the descendants of Pritha, they're also, it's expected that they are sadhus. They are kshatriyas, and their being sadhus is somewhat different to the brahmanas who are sadhus. Brahmanas are sadhus by absorption in spiritual, or at least religious, ritualistic activities. Kshatriyas, they are duty-bound to exhibit their sadhutva, their state of being good, by, if necessary, killing, which might not seem very good, but it is also required in human society. The idea that in human society we shall have absolute non-violence is an invitation to more violence, because if there is no checking force for those who would use violence to exploit others, then they'll exploit others forcefully. As we see, it's happened a few times in the United States of America in the last generation or so, in certain cities. When the police go on strike, then the thieves get busy, and they'll forcefully smash windows. New Orleans, when there was law and order breakdown, looting and pillaging took place. So violence, or at least the threat of it, is also required, but for maintaining law and order in society. But it should be dispensed by sadhus, persons who are trained in dharma and who engage in violence only when necessary. We find Arjuna had this dilemma before fighting. Although he'd fought countless times, he was famous as a great fighter, because he was not only a kshatriya in theory, but he is one of the best kshatriyas in the history of this day of Brahma. But in this instance, he thought, it's not proper to fight. It's a very difficult thing to understand. I mean, now we, having got the gift of Bhagavad Gita, we can understand that Arjuna was wrong, but I think most people, the first time they go through it, they think he's right. And Krishna seems quite unreasonable when he chastises Arjuna for not wanting to fight. That you're a fool, and you're not honorable. Arjuna thought it was most honorable to desist from taking part in the fight, but Krishna told him this is dishonorable. In such a system, you have to fight. In such a situation, just like if the police force are standing by and watching while a gang of thieves plunder and loot, then it's not at all honorable. And they will. A few years ago in England, in London, there were riots, and it was in the local areas where it was taking place. The local police force in that area was insufficient to control them. So it took them a little time to mobilize more police from different parts of the country. And they moved in and arrested a lot of people and cleaned it all up. And people, what we might call ordinary citizens, were out on the street cheering the police because they recognized that we need their protection. So it's a matter of honor for real Kshatriyas that in their whole kingdom there shouldn't be any vice or there shouldn't be any sinfulness, such as killing of animals, an unnecessary killing of animals, slaughter of cows and bulls. And the people should be so, they should feel so protected that they can leave their house and leave the door open and no one will go in. You can't do that in San Diego, I don't think so. It's not a... They still come in, yeah, even if you have the door locked with all kinds of alarms and everything else. But that the fact that people have to have locks and alarm systems, according to the Vedic understanding, means the government's not doing its job properly. The citizens should live fearlessly. They should not have to have any fear that there will be mistreated, exploited. But if the government itself promotes the exploitation of the citizens, then what hope is there for the people? The praja is the word used for citizen in Sanskrit. And it doesn't only refer to humans. It refers to all living beings that take birth. Even the plants. In Vedic culture, even the plants should not be mistreated. And if you've been to ISKCON's temple in Vrindavan or Bombay, you may wonder why in the courtyard there's a tree in both cases. The reason is because they were there before the temple was built, and Prabhupada said, don't cut the tree. Let the tree live. There's no need to cut it. Actually, there are two trees in the courtyard of Bombay temple, ISKCON Bombay temple. So that is the culture which the Kshatriyas, they have to protect. I'm sure that going through this series, fairly sure that going through this series of verses, you have had a good discussion of the ideal Kshatriyas such as Ramachandra Bhagavan, Yudhishthira Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, and today's leaders who are just about as antithetical to these sadhus, these saintly persons, as could possibly be. Not only do they... Anyway, we could get into it, but then we could have a whole... You know, we could speak for days about all the atrocities and cheating and lying perpetrated by modern governments. It's a terrible situation. What can the citizens do? What can they do? It's a very difficult situation. So, as I was also saying last night, that Srila Prabhupada had a vision that as far as possible, Vardashram society should be re-established. That's a tremendous challenge for us. Partadam kirti dushanam. The very fact that the bull, dharma, the bull, is being mistreated, it's a blot on the character, or it appears to be like that. Of course, Parikshit Maharaj will roll up and do the needful. But it's a blot on the character of the king if any citizens, including the animals, are mistreated in his kingdom. So similarly, as descendants, disciplic descendants of Srila Prabhupada, we have a very great responsibility to discharge, to not only spread Krishna consciousness, the science of bhakti yoga, but to establish within society the governmental system, social system, whereby which is most conducive for actual civilized life, and which is conducive for Krishna consciousness. Because it's very difficult to be Krishna conscious in a society which is dedicated to, you can't really say another kind of ideal. It's not really an ideal. The modern society, the contemporary society in which we live, is dedicated to enjoyment of the senses. We should get money and enjoy oneself. But this is degrading. Of course, within Vedic culture, enjoyment of the senses is not disallowed, but it is regulated, and for those who are most advanced, they will withdraw themselves from sense enjoyment. But to have sense enjoyment as the be-all and end-all of society means it's going to be gross degradation. And the killing of animals is part of that, because people think, well, I like to eat animals, I like to eat meat, so we can dominate them. That's there from right in Genesis, that the misinterpretation that man was given dominion over the animals by God. So that's been the misinterpretation, that man is meant for killing the animals. That's been a cornerstone of Western civilization, for want of a better word, practically since its inauguration, at least in the Christian world, we can say. And all kinds of anomalies come from that. Exploitation, we see that in the name of enjoyment, men exploit women, women exploit men. There's no responsibility. They come together, they enjoy sex, and then they go away, and there's no responsibility of raising children, living in chastity. Is that some words are coming in, but other words are going out? Chastity, you may not hear that word very much. What about fornication? Who knows what that means? Only from fundamentalist Christians. Otherwise, it's not a word in common parlance. It means, illicit sex, we'd call it, illicit sex. So, this creates a degraded society. The mentality of degradation becomes more and more and more. And when we kill animals, then it becomes a normal thing just to kill humans also. We don't see the animals being killed. They're all in slaughterhouses a long way from the city. It used to be that people were meat eaters, but they'd kill their own animal, or if it was a pig, they'd take it to the butcher, because pigs are difficult to kill. They fight like anything. And they have very literally thick skin. They're like a little rhino. So they're very difficult to kill. You need an expert. Otherwise, people, they kill their own chickens and wring their neck or whatever. Sorry to say these things, but this is the subject that we're coming to. So nowadays, it's all from a store. The meat comes nicely packed. You don't see the suffering. You don't hear the cries. When the pigs are caught, I know this from India. Have you seen? They probably don't have it in Mayapur, where you live, because it's mostly Muslims and they don't eat pigs. And the Hindus in that area don't eat pigs also. They're mostly gauchers, and they only eat fish and chicken nowadays also, but not pigs. But you see sometimes the pigs are wandering around here and there, and then the owners come and catch them with a lasso, and then they scream, just like a baby. If you didn't see, you'd think it was just that's a baby crying. So they keep the slaughterhouses well away, out of sight. We don't see, and we think it's just normal. So then we see in the newspaper, we don't see it, that so many people are killed in some drone strike, and we don't see it. It's just something, newspaper, drone strike on page 3 or something, and then get to the back page and see the baseball results. People don't think of it. They're people, because the whole society is soaked with very gross and sinful sex gratification, then people become so insensitive that they can kill animals. They take it as normal. In their dealings, they are impersonal, because the most important thing for everyone is me. Aham mameti, this is the material consciousness. Me and mine. So without purification by spiritual consciousness, then we're going to be selfish. And then the whole society must become hellish. Because if everyone is selfish, everyone is competing with everyone else, and some people get more nasty than others. And in such a materialistic society, the ones who are more nasty or more sophisticated in their exploitation of others, they become the leaders. Might is right. That's the unspoken motto of materialistic society, despite all efforts to curb that by democracy or socialism or whatever. But exploitation must be there. There's no system in and of itself that can curb exploitation, even Varnashram, as is seen in the breakdown of the Varnashram system in India, in what's called the caste system. That is the Asura Varnashram, where people, they presume themselves to be superior simply on the basis of birth and oppress others because they are supposed to be of lower birth. There is such a thing as lower birth. We get sadasadyoni janmasu. We get higher and lower births according to our good and bad karma. That is a fact. But just like that God gave man dominion over all the animals, that doesn't mean that you exploit or look down on those who are less fortunate or in a lower position, but one in a higher position in the present life, may not be in the next life, but if he's a sadhu, then he looks to the welfare of others, not to the exploitation of others. So this Varnashram system, Srila Prabhupada wanted to re-establish that, and non-exploitive society where everyone cooperates with the highest goal in mind. They cooperate in their material activities with the highest goal in mind, that everyone can cultivate pure love for Krishna. And in this way, everyone, sve sve karmanya bhirata sangsiddhim labhate naraha, everyone can achieve the highest perfection. So it is a great challenge for the followers of Srila Prabhupada. He left this world, having spoken about this, about establishing Varnashram, he left this world having acquired properties, farms. There are several in America that were acquired by Srila Prabhupada. There are about four or five, aren't there? There's Gita Nagari, Murli Vadak, is it? And then Murari Sevak. And there's the New Taliban, New Vrindavan, of course, is the most. Yeah, I said Gita Nagari. So about four. And then after that, some more. Sharanagati, I think, was established shortly after Prabhupada. Chintamani Dham, where's that? Kentucky. That's a recent one. Let's hope for its success. So Srila Prabhupada was very serious about this. And he made this monumental statement that 50% of my work is to be done in establishing Varnashram. And if you think what Srila Prabhupada did, then it was unthinkable. No one could imagine that Krishna consciousness would be spread all over the world. But Srila Prabhupada did it. He did the what seemed impossible, he did it. And he left us this major challenge to establish Varnashram society. Of course, it would seem that we have to establish Krishna consciousness we have to have devotees, because you can't have Varnashram. You can't have a virtual Varnashram. You have to have real people who are... It would be easier, yeah. We have to pull all the people out of their virtual... That's their virtual imaginary worlds, and give them work to do on the land and live on the land. So, yeah, it's a great challenge, and whoever can take that up, they'll definitely get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said about the temple in Mayapur, who can establish this, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur will personally come and bring them back to Godhead. So if we can establish this Varnashram, then certainly we must get of course we can't dictate it, but we should get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. And the beginning of that is the actually very simple proposition of going on living on the land and producing our own food. And some devotees who have been working with me in India doing this, they've been delighted that they plant some seeds, they do the necessary watering them, and how much the land produces. It's not actually such a difficult thing to, if we follow the prescribed system, then the earth produces abundant crops. Of course, it depends where you are. In Mayapur, where you live, the land is so fertile. You can, and the climate is so nice. You have a 12-month growing season. California also, it would be very nice if we need some water, but otherwise the climate is just like heaven. And people all over the world think that California is just like heaven. But the people have come here and they're in hellish consciousness. People are not happy. In a place like San Diego, you think that people should be happy. They've got a good climate. Mostly people are well-to-do. Janmaishwarya Shutashri. They're born in a great nation, Janma. Generally, people are well-to-do. They're generally quite intelligent and good-looking, but they're not at all happy. They're suffering. People are suffering so much. So we have to give this Krishna consciousness and give an alternative way of life, because we find that many people, they like to take to Krishna consciousness, but because they're caught in the contemporary way of life, that the time that we need to chant Hare Krishna, to perform sadhana, it's very difficult to do it, because if we have a full-time job and in India more so, because the full-time jobs there are really full-time. 6 or 7 days a week. Usually no one works less than 12 hours a day. That's just normal. That's how these economies come up. It's not just by chance, but people, they work very hard. So, and living among materialistic people, it's very difficult to get that purified consciousness. So if we can establish these communities, then as Srila Prabhupada said, that people will join our farms in their millions. Can we imagine that? It's hardly imaginable, is it? But it's the word of our guru, which we accept as empowered by Krishna. So that's a thought. I've been talking a lot about this over the last few years, and it is inspiring to see that some devotees, family people, leave their city jobs and city homes and go and live very simply for higher principles, because they want to live in Krishna consciousness and not just squeeze it in whenever they have time. Hare Krishna. Any question, please, or comment? Yes, please.
Prabhupada said 50% unfinished Varnashram Dharma. And sometimes people, perhaps rightly so, I have no opinion, redefine what that means, and it becomes a much easier goal. We're not talking about trying to help with the question.
Could you please clarify what that redefinition? I'm not aware of what it is.
Well, we're not talking about, you know, strict rules for men. We're talking about, you know, more or less if they chant Hare Krishna and feel happy with them, that's Varnashram Dharma. And, you know, we've got to, we're not talking about imposing some archaic, you know, agrarian.
Does anyone say that? Have you heard people say that? Really?
Sure.
Well, that's...
You know, Prabhupada said this whole thing about rules for women and rules for men, and it's archaic. It'll never work. People are thinking differently now. We're trying to take...
And modern American society works? The whole need for a different system is because modern society doesn't work. It doesn't work to make people even physically healthy, what to speak of mentally healthy, or happy. And it certainly doesn't inspire people toward higher consciousness of understanding the nature of God and the self. So, certainly from Srila Prabhupada's teachings and from Shastra, we can't say that Varnashram means just chant Hare Krishna and do whatever you're doing. That there are literally hundreds of Dharma Shastras. There's one Maharashtrian Pandit. He made Kane's Dharma Shastras. He translated. It takes up about this much on a bookshelf. All the Dharma Shastras, extant Dharma Shastras that he collected and translated. So, not that all the Dharma Shastras are applicable to everyone. They're mostly for different communities and different times and places, but it is certainly a very regulated society. In fact, in Vedic culture, everything is regulated. Even in a house, where should the kitchen be? In the kitchen, where should the stove be? And there are reasons for that. You may say Vastu Shastra, but there's also because in different parts of the house, there are living beings, subtle living beings who are everywhere, and dharma helps us to be in harmony with all of that. So there are many rules. People who are not used to that, it might seem intimidating to them, but if people are raised in it, it's just normal. And it helps. Just like, for instance, sleeping with one head towards the east is not the essence of spiritual life by any means, but it's something helpful for physical and mental health. So that's the kind of thing. Every activity is regulated with understanding of the subtle laws of nature, which in the modern age, people, they don't even know that when we die, we go to another body according to our karma. Now, gradually, the idea is coming, but they don't have any idea of how that works. But with Vedic culture is based on an understanding of all the subtleties, and it brings us in line with that. So if anyone says that Varnashram just means chant Hare Krishna and have a solar-powered computer, I personally wouldn't bother much with them, because what's the use? If someone is... That's kind of dharma. Willingly, knowingly misinterpreting what Srila Prabhupada says and what Shastra says. That's my understanding of that. Better work with people who are serious to fulfill the order of the Acharya. Otherwise it's hopeless. If they want to brazenly misinterpret, then what are you going to discuss with such people? Yes, please. Could you speak a little more loudly, please? Yeah. The whole idea of a king is something which really seems archaic. How would the Brahmins know if the kings are doing their dharma? Because it's specified what the dharma of a king is. It's not a very difficult thing to know whether they're following their dharma or not. You were going to say something, Mahatattva Prabhu? No. All right, so... Do we try to bring people into Krishna consciousness first and then introduce them to Varnashram Dharma? Or do we have devotional agrarian communities and bring people in? Well, we need devotees to start the agrarian communities, and then we can bring people in. So both. It does require much research into Srila Prabhupada's instructions on this, into various shastras descriptions of it, into traditional Indian culture. It does require much research, no doubt, but it should be done. Ah, please. Yes. Exactly, yeah. You have to pay the rent.
We're paying the taxes. You go out on the road to drive out the Balmoral Park. We built Balmoral Park. We built the road. We made that car. And then you stand here and tell us all we should be doing this and that. Get real. We need to be doing this and that.
Well, what you call real is birth, death, old age, and disease.
I mean, if we all stopped working and followed you, you wouldn't have a slice of bread tomorrow.
Actually, we would, because Krishna provides, not you. But that exactly, Varnashram, it's not meant that everyone is a monk. Only a small part of the population. Others are administrators, merchants, farmers, teachers, workers. So, yeah. Rather than arguing with such people, we should just get out there and show and do it. At this stage, among ourselves, among monks, we can discuss such things, but really the onus is on us to do something in a considered manner. Probably it's best not to blow a lot of bugles about what we're doing, just to start and gradually introduce it. It's definitely very tough.
There's a lot of people out there who are starting small farms.
Mm.
And it's almost like a catch-22 because they're up against the agribusiness, they're up against all kinds of stuff. So it's not actually so easy. Hey, we've got a farm. I'm completely into it. I agree with you 100%.
Mm.
It's almost like, not that everybody goes out there just plant seeds in the ground, but it all comes up and everything's great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard work, and you've got a real economic struggle.
Well, it can be hard work if you desire to have all kinds of unnecessary things, like cell phones and computers and electricity, the things that you have to pay for. But if we just produce what we need, then we actually don't have to work so much. But undoubtedly, establishing Varnashram is a great challenge. There's no doubt about it. But we shouldn't shy away from it because of that.
What's the alternative?
Yeah, that is the alternative. Living like cats and dogs. Even our devotees, they have to be part of this soul-killing civilization. Which Kalim Sattvaharang Pungsam, the Kali Yuga saps the sattva, the very existence of the living beings. Mm, please. To get things set up, yeah, is hard work, yeah. Well, if we think it'll take a generation or two, what will happen? In the next generation, they'll think it'll take a generation or two. And the next generation after that, they'll also think it'll take a generation. Someone has to make a move at some point. It's just like becoming Krishna conscious. You might think, well, I'll do it in the next life. And then you think, in the next life, well, I'll do it in the next life. And it just goes on. Someone has to make a start.
Even the history of farming in America, you've got the first generation goes out there and freeholds and gets the land. And they live a rough life in a dirt hut with, you know, parchment windows.
Mm-hmm.
And the next generation, you know, gets all the trees out, gets the rocks out, gets the barn built.
Very good, very good, yeah.
That's why it's such a hard break to happen. You know, the agribusiness crushing these people off the land. Because you've got 5-6 generations of families have built up that farm. That's what it takes. And once you get it going, and the other thing is it will work, it's such an economic struggle.
Mm.
Like, okay, live out on the land in Escondido. We've got to make our own houses. Well, if we could just go walk through the woods and hack down the trees and build our own houses, no problem.
Yeah.
Well, that's an endangered oak there. Well, that's going to cost $1,000 of money.
Yeah, there are multiple challenges, no doubt. In India, one major challenge is that previously there was common land for grazing cows. Not anymore. So what do you do with the cows? How do you graze them? Even in England, they still have commons. The land is called common. And it was meant for the villagers to, everyone could graze their animals. Now they're mostly golf courses.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
How to integrate grihasthas and brahmacharis in farm communities. Well, there could be thousands of detailed questions. I think we'd, and actually there are, but I think we should, for this class, just stick to the principle. Otherwise, I do have a CD with 50 or so lectures on about this, and it's probably in there somewhere. Integrate means brahmacharis are mostly the gurukul boys, the young boys. They're not 25, 30 years old. They're more like 5 to 13. So Hare Krishna, should we finish there? Hare Krishna.